Spirit Blade Underground, episode 487. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, a review of Star Wars The Last Jedi and my top five favorite geeky Christmas presents of all time, plus a few thoughts on the, I guess you might say, the meaning of Christmas, specifically what it's meant to me throughout various stages of my life, and kind of what it means to me these days. All right, let's get to it.
Displacement engines are charged for warp, Captain Franson.
Great, computer. Set a course for the uncharted territories.
By your command. And might I compliment your choice of clothing today?
Oh, thanks. Almost went with the blue shirt, but felt like red at the last minute.
Warning, enemy ships approaching.
Divert power to shields.
Defensive systems malfunctioning.
Oh, what,
overdue
what?
For annual maintenance.
Oh, come on.
Incoming weapons fire.
Evasive maneuvers. Arm the photon torpedo.
Wormhole detected.
What? Wormhole? Where the frez did that come from?
Critical gravitational damage.
No.
Supernova detected within lethal range.
We've got the...
Projected chance of lethality 100%.
What the crap is going on? Just a heads up, this is a full spoiler review of Star Wars The Last Jedi, so if you'd like to listen to the rest of the podcast and come back to this review later, then for now, skip ahead in the podcast, jump ahead 36 minutes and 10 seconds from right now. Star Wars The Last Jedi, which on the IMDb synopsis... reads, Rey develops her newly discovered abilities with the guidance of Luke Skywalker, who is unsettled by the strength of her powers. Meanwhile, the Resistance prepares to do battle with the First Order. Okay, so I'm just going to say this right now. I'm not making two videos or wasting time talking about vague plot references. You know, no one's going to decide whether or not they want to see this movie based on my review. So... I'm going full on spoilers here. Do not watch this review if you have not seen the movie yet and want to avoid spoilers. There are some big things to be spoiled in this movie. I'm going to spoil a lot of them. Turn back now. This is your last warning. All right, here we go. First off, my preferences in movies. I prefer movies that are character-driven, that are psychologically consistent-ish. I know that's very relative and vague. That have kind of a pseudo-realism to characters and the choices they make and stuff. As I guess maybe a popular, quick, easy benchmark, I tend to not enjoy the Marvel movies that because the lightness in the character presentation there tends to kind of take away from some of the psychological realism and some of the consistency in the characters and who they are. So I do tend to enjoy things that are more serious. Although I do like what I would call character-respecting humor now and then. If it flows out of who the character is, then you know some of that can be welcome as long as it's not too frequent. I just tend to not laugh at what you know other people think is funny. So I don't have any particular likes or dislikes, a dislike of the Star Wars kind of franchise. I mean, I grew up with it and I enjoyed it and I certainly appreciate its creative legacy and, you know, how much we have, you know, George Lucas and the Star Wars trilogy, the original, to thank for all the crazy cool ideas that have found their way into other kinds of science fiction and all across media and stuff like that and different entertainment mediums. So I definitely appreciate it for that. But do I prefer Star Wars as an intellectual property over, say, Battlestar Galactica, or The Walking Dead, or Farscape, or Star Trek? No. To me, these days, it's just another one of these choices of intellectual properties. It is not like I'm not, I don't have really nostalgia for it. I've got some nice memories of it, but I think that's different than nostalgia. So anyway, just wanted to give you a sense of kind of where I'm coming from. I think that where I'm coming from is definitely not kind of where the majority of people are going to be coming from. So you can just take my opinions for whatever you will, as I think should always be the case. Okay, so let me talk about my reactions, my thoughts and feelings about this one. This was enjoyable in a number of ways, but also an unusual experience. And I would say that's all in the realm of the script, you know, the things that I found unusual. Numerous times I felt like they were rehashing beats from the trilogy, which I'll get to that, some examples of that, which was a little unusual. It felt half like homage and half like, I don't know, what are you doing? Can we move on? Can we tell new stories and explore new ideas and new plot beats? And, you know, can we just do some new stuff, go in a daring new direction? So I wish that we would have seen more of that. There were numerous times that I felt robbed of payoff that I felt like they were kind of maybe building to, or maybe that I just brought to the theater that I personally wanted. Or I felt sometimes confused by what seemed like plot inconsistencies or logical inconsistencies in the story. So let me break these down. I'll talk about inconsistencies first, then stolen payoffs, and then do I get to that later on? Oh, I'll talk about the characters a little bit, and then like repeated story beats toward the end of my comments on the story. This is going to be a longer kind of review probably than my normal length reviews. So let's see here. Oh yeah, inconsistencies. Well, first, some people aren't going to call these inconsistencies. They're just kind of like concessions that you make for movies that are made for families. Okay, the example I'll give, BB-8. This little android should be mass-produced, because if he is, the rebellion or the resistance or whatever they are now, they can just say, hey, BB-8s, go and win this war for us. This little droid is so freaking capable. He can do anything, like anything. You give him a task, he will succeed. You know, I don't even know what more to say about BB-8. Mass produce him, he'll win the war for you. Light speed technology should have been leveraged as a weapon long before now. I don't understand. It was a cool moment in this movie where, Jerpel. I'll talk about her name. The purple general, which I call Jerpel, sacrifices herself and, you know, sets a course for light speed to go boom right through the big dreadnought or whatever the big ship was, surrounded by the smaller but still large ships. Like, in one suicide stroke of just activating light speed in the right direct, pointed in the right direction, boom, takes them all out. She just takes them all out. And I'm thinking to myself, well, that was cool in terms of like kind of a moment, like, whoa, you know, we never saw that before. But then I'm thinking, well, they had to know that potentially the technology could be used that way. Why have we not seen that move done before? So anyway, that was cool in the moment, but a second later I was like, I got some problems with that. Let's see here. And the destruction of the Jedi books by both Luke and Yoda. That both characters seemingly affirming the end of the Jedi Order and the end of these books being around. But the books, I think, you tell me if you saw the same thing, they seem to survive. Finn opens up a drawer near the end of the movie to get something out or whatever, and the books all seem to be in there, perfectly preserved, these last Jedi texts or whatever, you know. And also Luke said that Rey will be the last Jedi after him. And I'm like, well, I thought we were okay now with the Jedi's going away. I thought that's the whole conversation you and Yoda had while you were burning the books. So it was just kind of like a little unusual. Now, these kinds of inconsistencies and the other kinds of criticisms I'm talking about, I want to recognize as there's some kind of a leaf blower as usual around this time of day as I'm recording my review going on right outside my window. These kinds of inconsistencies are going to be ignored, and I have no problem with them being ignored by people who enjoy other elements of the story. You know, there's franchises that I love that, you know, you could, you know, nitpick as I am kind of doing here and point out inconsistencies, and I'll defend them and I'll say, oh yeah, da 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 da, you got to think about it this way, da da da, and I'll rationalize it. And I think that's kind of what we tend to do much more readily with franchises, with fiction, with entertainment that is in some other area really working for us, really working well. And, you know, you can look at the same movie and there can be like legitimate problems that somebody has, and another person actually has legitimate explanations, and neither person is going to understand where the other is coming from. And I think, this is my theory, I think that it comes back to, okay, well, what is working in the movie or the fiction or the entertainment for you, and how well is it working? That's going to make those other issues maybe not even noticeable or easily explainable in your mind. So anyway, I apologize if it seems like I'm nitpicking, but it's because it's not, in general, the kind of story that I really connect with, that I think a lot of these things kind of popped out to me. With each one of these, yeah, I could come up with something. Just give me a minute. I could come up with some kind of explanation. But my mind doesn't go there because the other things that aren't connecting with me don't lead me to give the movie the benefit of the doubt and kind of work for it. I remember, this is getting off track a little bit, if I haven't gotten off track already, but years ago I had a friend in college who loved Star Wars so much and would see like the little matte squares following the TIE fighters as they were flying around, and she said that she and her friends just decided that those were the deflector shields, you know? But it was an imperfection in the special effects. It wasn't deflector shields, you know? But I mean, that's kind of where, and that's kind of an extreme example. She even laughed at herself, you know, that way of thinking. But that is kind of the direction that we tend to go. So anyway, don't take this as me saying this is a bad movie and that you're dumb for enjoying it if you didn't notice these things or have a problem with these things or whatever. Again, just sharing my reactions here. I know I'm going into maybe some contested waters with the people really, really loving the Star Wars franchise a lot. So it's not my intention to poop on anybody's parade. That's a great visual, isn't it? Let's see here. Okay, so that's it for inconsistencies. Now, stolen payoffs. These are possibly even more subjective because I think they're affected by, in some cases, certainly, things that I brought to the theater with me that I kind of would have liked to have seen. So I do appreciate, I should say, that these, what I'm calling stolen payoffs, I appreciate that they were unexpected, that they went in directions that I thought the movie was going, the story was going in one direction to a certain kind of moment, and then, oh, they're not doing that moment. They're doing a different thing. They're going down a different path. So I do appreciate that. I do appreciate how the movie kind of kept me like, huh, oh. Oh, they're not at the same time, I would love to have those kinds of surprises and unexpected directions, but have them hit me with dramatic weight rather than feeling more like a rug being pulled out from under me, which was the case for me with these, what I'm calling stolen payoffs. So, the first stolen payoff, Rey and Kylo both saw each other turn, kind of in their force visions or whatever, but only one of them does. Kylo turns, well, he doesn't really turn. I guess in the end, neither one of them really turns. They both see in their visions, you know, the other turning. I think that could still happen. I'll come back to that thought. But it's just hinted at. And a lot of this, you know, these kinds of movies, they're serialized, and so we're looking at like a middle chapter of a much larger story, and so, you know, we have to keep that in mind as well. At the same time, I haven't seen that third chapter yet, you know, of this particular trilogy. All I have to go on is what they've given me so far. So yeah, I'm just judging it on its own merits and how it by itself affected me. Let's see here. It by itself, along with the previous history of Star Wars, blah, 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 blah. All right, let's see. Build up. Okay, build up to Kylo turning on his master. You know, we could kind of see that coming little by little, and then it ramped up toward the very end. We could see that he was about to turn on his master, which he does. But then he just stays on the dark side. I thought, oh, this is going to be a big moment, a big turning point. The character's going to go in a totally different direction. We're going to start seeing him changing and shifting and stuff. And eventually, at the end of this trilogy, he's going to be a totally different person, you know? They didn't go there. So anyway, Snoke is built up as this mysterious master of the dark side. Who is this guy in The Force Awakens? And how does he know all this stuff about the Force? I thought all the Sith were wiped out. Or, you know, who is this mysterious figure? Where did he come from? Where did he learn what he knows about the Force? All that kind of stuff. I mean, tell me you weren't asking that question. Maybe you weren't. But it's been my impression that, like, that's a hot topic. Everyone wants to know who the crap is this mysterious figure, Snoke. And then he's killed without exploring his origins, answering really any questions about where he comes from, how he got his knowledge of the Force. really an unusual choice to kill him without explaining anything. Again, maybe they'll explain more of that in the third movie, but we don't have that third movie. Just looking at this one right now, that felt really weird. Okay, Jerpal, the general with the purple hair who comes in to kind of replace Leia while she's in sickbay. First off, the purple hair and just the way she was dressed, I was like, my first thought was pretty much reflected by Poe a moment later. I was like, she does not fit in with this crowd. She does not look like a general at all. She doesn't look like she's ready to bark orders and be serious and tactical and stuff. She came wearing her prom dress and she just had her hair dyed. Maybe she's, you know, I don't know what the deal is with purple hair. Maybe she's from a species of human that has purple hair. I don't know what's going on there. But even if there were reasons for it, just aesthetically, she stood out. She was like not visually like anybody else in the room and didn't seem to fit in with the role she was being given. And so I, with Poe, was like, she is not what I expected. And then I expected then that because they acknowledged in the script that she's not what we expected, we'd learn more about her. Why is she different? Why did she come dressed like this? Or, you know, why, you know, just, I don't know. I just felt like visually the way they presented her, I was just waiting for her to be explored, and she never was. I kind of think to myself now, well, why not have her replace Leia and have Leia self-sacrifice? Because as we know, Carrie Fisher passed away after filming her scenes for this movie, and so they've got to figure out how they're going to handle that transition. I thought maybe this is it. Maybe they'd done they'd enlarged her character in some reshoots at the end or something, and this was going to be kind of how they handled that, you know? But that's not the way they went. She ended up sacrificing herself. I could have used another movie with Jerpal to get to know her backstory and kind of the complexity of her character a little bit more. And it also would have potentially helped to transition in the wake of Carrie Fisher's death if they had kept her around and had Leia die in this movie. That was an unusual, just kind of like, here's this character, she's really unusual, and we're not going to explore her at all. That really unusual to me. Luke pulls off an awesome force stunt in the climax, giving a sense of the power he's developed. At first, I was a little disappointed. I was like, oh, we're not going to get like this full-on lightsaber duel. And then there's the reveal that he's like projecting an illusion of himself from like, I don't know how far away on the other side of the galaxy. I'm like, holy crap, that was awesome. Luke is awesome. And so I thought, yeah. And then he says, see you around, kid. And then he disappears, and then we see him floating and exerting effort, and then he sits down, or he floats, he lands, and I was like, dude, man, I can't wait for the third movie when we see him really go to town with a lightsaber. What the crap? Then he starts having like this Jedi Force heart attack, and he dies. He just, you know, he vanished as the whole Jedi vanishing, his clothes fall down and stuff, and he goes the way of Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda and all that jazz. So that was disappointing. Now, you might be saying, you know, well, in kind of a meta sense, Mark Hamill, you know, he's gotten up there in years. He's not, like, kept himself in kind of, like, action hero actor shape all these years. And so what were you expecting, Peter? Well, I was expecting that they would go more the wizard route, where he wasn't going to be the knight, you know, flying and flipping around and stuff. Even though they did some cool stuff, you know, that kind of went in that direction, that was cool and satisfying in the end with him dodging Kylo's lightsaber and stuff. And he seemed to have gotten himself in really pretty good shape for that scene. He was looking pretty trim and ready for action, you know. But I did figure they're going to go a more wizard route, where he's going to be using telekinesis more and stuff, or some other kind of, well, in this case, the illusions and stuff like that. I thought it would have been really cool if he would have done like a telekinetic lightsaber duel, where he just stands there, just like with this, you know, kind of like Zen whatever look on his face, and he just like lets go of his lightsaber and it goes into the air, and then it's like doing all kinds of awesome fighting. He's just controlling it all with his mind. That would have been really cool. And I thought maybe we would still get that for a second in the third movie, and then he has his Jedi Force heart attack and he dies, so that's not gonna... As I think about it now, I'm wondering, gosh, Luke, would it have been easier to fly to the planet and do a telekinetic lightsaber duel instead of staying where you were and doing to send the illusion out and give yourself a Force heart attack? I don't know. I don't know how the Force works. So anyway, and then the last one here. Rey's parents, or her parentage, or whatever, is revealed as being kind of just nobodies. You know, they weren't anybody special. She doesn't come from, like, the Skywalker line or anything like that. In one sense, that's cool, because it kind of says, you know, even, like, a quote-unquote nobody like Rey can lead a significant life. I think that's a great truth, that we are all made for highly significant lives, regardless of where we come from, you know? And so I think that's a great, you know, little message there, but dramatically it fell short for me. And I still can't help but wonder if there's going to be a further truth that's revealed in the next episode. I mean, you know, she only had that moment of, like, yes, my parents were just, you know, they weren't anybody special, when she was talking to Kylo, and Kylo could have been deceiving her, or he and her could have both been wrong about it. She's not been to a gravesite. We haven't seen corpses, you know. So I would not be at all surprised if there's more to be revealed about her parents and where she comes from. And they might backtrack on this whole, like, she comes from, you know, nobody scavengers or whatever. I think there's probably more there, but I could be wrong. Anyway, so yeah, a lot of the kind of, like, the issues that I have with the story and kind of things that were unsatisfying to me, they could still be resolved and fixed in the third movie, but right now I don't have that one, so I'm not giving it the benefit of the doubt. I'm just looking at this thing here, and I mean, even if they were to get resolved in the third one, I'm not sure that that would make this second movie in this particular trilogy a better experience for me. I really would have liked some more of these kind of impactful, satisfying moments to have happened in this movie, instead of what felt like them pulling the rug out from under me and just saying, hold off, or no, you don't get that, you know. So talking just briefly about some of the main characters here, Luke. Wow, he really interested me in terms of his reasons for abandoning the Jedi Order, and I appreciated his recognition of the hypocrisy and hubris of the Jedi Order in the events of how they treated, you know, how they acted in the prequels. Mark Hamill also really had me on the edge of my seat watching his subtle and realistic feeling to me performance. You know, all I know is his stuff from, you know, the original trilogy, which is, like, you know, by today's standards, actors and what they had actors do, the type of performances they had actors, you know, coaching actors to do and asking them to do, it just wasn't of the same level as today, where much more often in movies you have actors that are being required to do very subtle things, very subtle, like just a subtle welling up of tears in their eyes and stuff. You just didn't see a lot of that by comparison in movies of, like, the 70s and 80s, certainly not movies anyway that were, like, geek genre movies, you know. So and then, you know, since then I've just known him mostly for his voice acting and playing these kind of more bombastic characters. He's done some TV spots and stuff over the years where he plays these kind of, like, over the top characters. So I was like, I don't know if he's going to be able to, is he going to stick out like a sore thumb with all these other kinds of modern actors? But no, he really delivered what was, for me, a really nice, subtle, grounded performance. I'm going to probably use the word grounded more times than you want to hear. But I really liked it a lot. I hope he gets more serious character roles in the near future as a result of his work in this movie. This is the best dramatic acting I've ever seen from him. So I really, really enjoyed Mark Hamill in this movie. Leia also had some nice moments. Although Carrie Fisher's voice and speech have changed so much over the years, possibly due to heavy smoking. I think that's something that she's kind of just been doing, you know, had been doing for years and years. I don't know if that's what I'm hearing or not. Probably in the depth of her voice, but also just in the way she shapes her vowels and the way she talks, there was some different things going on there. So to the point that I found it to be a distraction, both in the Force Awakens and in this movie. Unlike Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford, she is almost unrecognizable to me when compared to the Carrie Fisher of the 70s and 80s. Still, I adjusted somewhat and felt like her performance was more grounded and realistic than in the last movie. Leia had also a great moment early on in this movie when she survived being blown into space, which I was like, there they go. This is how we're going to see her off, you know. But she survived that, and it was a really cool moment to see, where we see her inherited force powers on display, you know, in ways that we, of course, never had before. And it was surprisingly moving to me. It was one of my favorite scenes in the movie. So that was a cool moment. Other than that, you know, Carrie Fisher's performance was not like a standout to me. Kylo Ren, still a complex and layered character as far as I'm concerned, but almost all of that seems to come from Adam Driver's fantastic performance. I really wanted to know more about why he so naturally gravitated toward the dark side, as we learned that he did earlier in life. Was that just pure force genetics passed down from his grandfather Darth Vader, or does something in his history play a part? I was bummed that he just kind of took Snoke's place after killing him, which I mentioned before. He talked just, you know, prior to that, well, I think about actually after killing Snoke, he talked about letting old things die and then invited Rey to join him. And for a second, I thought he would introduce a third option away from siding with either the Order or the Rebellion. I was like, wow, what is he about to suggest here? That they, that the two of them just kind of go off, you know, and just abandon this whole conflict? And just, I was like, what could this third option be? But nope, it was same old duality. Join me, we will rule the galaxy together as boyfriend and girlfriend. So I guess that's what he was offering there. And Rey did not take him up on it. I really enjoyed Daisy Ridley's performance as Rey again in this movie, but I wanted something more than just her growing beyond her insecurities. I feel like that coming of age motif that that we've seen before in both in this franchise and in all kinds of fiction, I wanted something a little bit different from her just kind of coming of age metaphorically. You know, there were indications that she was quick to explore the dark side. That was something that really concerned Luke in this movie. And her parentage isn't a closed case as far as I'm concerned. So I wanted more of her backstory and more of these elements to be explored, to change, to have reveals that would change the direction of her arc going forward. But as it is, it still just feels very safe to me. What was her kind of big moment, I feel like, near the end was like, I'm going to learn to move these rocks. I'm going to, you know, grow in my ability to use the Force and stuff. And I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what exactly her big character moment was, her arc. I mean, I guess she was, you know, maybe exploring just a little bit of temptation of the dark side, but it didn't feel enough to really, like, be like a major moment in the arc of her character and where she's going. I would love, personally, to see her go dark and to never be redeemed. This is suggested by a fan theory out there that Rey would go dark and Kylo Ren would go light, and they would end, you know, the franchise in those states. And I actually would have loved that, for Rey to go dark, to become a cautionary tale, even to the very end, never being redeemed, and for Kylo Ren to become a story of, you know, redemption or repentance, maybe is probably a much better word. Anyway, moving on. Finn and Poe. I'll just talk about these guys briefly together. John Boyega and Oscar Isaac. Both, I think, do great with these characters, but I think of them, one of them anyway, as being one character too many. I'm not sure exactly which one. If I could choose, I would probably ditch Finn from the get-go, not have him in Force Awakens or this one, and develop Poe a lot more, and then save that Finn story concept of a stormtrooper leaving the Order. It's a great concept. Save that for its own dedicated movie spinoff, and give more time for Poe to be explored in both of these movies. I don't have any comments on the rest of the cast, aside from saying that I thought they nearly all elevated the material that they were given to work with. Solid performers pretty much across the board, I think. I think this movie could have been about 10 minutes or more shorter than it was. One sequence in particular, I'm just like, ugh, why is this in here? It's for, well, I'll tell you why it's in here. It's for people other than me, you know? We've got Finn and the tech lady whose sister died at the beginning. She's kind of mourning that. She decides to help out Finn, and they're looking for this ultimate coder that's going to help them get away from the Empire. And so they have to go down to this planet and find this ultimate coder and explore this, you know, kind of like arms dealer society and da da da. I'm just like, why not just supply that coder from within the Resistance and then let him still be a traitor at some point? You can still accomplish, I think, what they did in terms of the story down there. I mean, maybe there was a little bit of character development, but again, with a story that I already feel like is, you know, spreading characters too thin, I would have preferred to cut it out and spend that time in a different way. All that running around on the arms dealer planet, what it felt like to me was just kind of a lighthearted romp for the kids, you know? It even had kids in there that I think probably kids in the audience are meant to kind of, you know, connect with and relate to, you know? For my taste, that whole sequence on that planet could have easily been written out. There's also, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of repeated story beats again. That was a big complaint among many of The Force Awakens, that it seemed to just kind of take the same plot skeleton from A New Hope, Episode 4, and just kind of rehash it here. And I feel like some of the same stuff was done this time around, but this time taken from what I could see, from the trilogy as a whole, instead of just from, say, Empire Strikes Back. So we had, like, Snoke showing, you know, Rey that her friends were losing in a space battle, and showing her that from the throne room, just like the Emperor showed Luke that his friends were losing a space battle from his throne room. And let's see here. Oh, we have Luke being struck down and then joining the Force, although kind of with a small twist from the original, which was Obi-Wan being simply struck down and then joining the Force. We have the Rebel base being attacked, the Rebel base with a giant metal door being attacked by giant walkers, and then, you know, being defended against by, you know, flying tactical fighters, you know. And then in this one, we've got the Resistance base with a giant metal door being attacked by giant walkers and, you know, fought against by, you know, smaller ships from the Resistance. Let's see, we've got the Luke parentage being revealed in Empire Strikes Back. That was a big moment. And in this one, we have the Rey parentage kind of being revealed as being, oh, it's not as exciting as you thought it was gonna be. Then we've got the Darth Vader turning on and killing the Emperor in the Return of the Jedi. And in this one, it's Kylo Ren turning on and killing Snoke, Leader Snoke. So really, the list, I think, goes on and on. Others on the internet will no doubt treat it much more exhaustively. But I was just kind of like, why are we doing this? Why can't we just go in some bold, bold new directions? So as I said, I think in my last review of the Star... Well, no, it was either my review of The Force Awakens or my review of Rogue One. I can't remember which one. But I'm excited for when this trilogy is done, for when they have done fan service to all of the original aging actors who they've brought back and stuff. Let's kill them off and get them out of the way, or whatever we got to do. Let's fast forward the plot 300 years into the future. Let's just be, you know, maybe if you want, I guess you can still deal with the Skywalker bloodline, but I don't even care about that necessarily. Let's just tell daring new stories with new arc kinds of arcs, and there's so much stuff you can do in this world. Anyway, I would have loved a big reveal like Empire. Oddly enough, as much as I'm saying I don't, you know, I like new things instead of, you know, these old beats kind of redone, I would have loved a big reveal like in The Empire Strikes Back that was shocking and dramatically changed how we view one or more characters in this trilogy. As I said before, one fan theory suggested that Kylo Ren would turn to the light side and Rey would turn to the dark side. That could still happen, I think, in the third movie, and it was arguably hinted at even in this movie, but I wanted that now so that we could have a whole movie dealing with the repercussions of that next time. As it is, you know, I'll be lucky if I even get that in the third movie. All that said, spending a lot of time on these kind of nitpicky things, I do love this world. I don't really enjoy the stories written for it in the movies anymore, but the world still stands strong to me. All the crazy creatures you get to see, all the cool vehicles and spacecrafts and stuff like that, all the kind of the world they've created, the New Order and all their, you know, their culture and the Resistance and of course the Jedi stuff, the lightsabers, the Force, all that kind of stuff. There's just so much to explore and to spend time playing around with in this world. The world still really stand strong for me, and I feel like they represented, you know, the best of what the Star Wars world as a setting has to offer here. And then also there was lighting and subtle visual touches in how the movie was made that made this world feel as grounded to me as ever. So I really appreciate that. Even when the script got a little silly for my taste, the more serious visual style helped me to get past those silly moments and back into an investment in the story. So that was really greatly appreciated. As far as, I've already talked about the cast, as far as like stunts and visuals, I'll just say briefly that there were some surprisingly obvious green screen moments a few times to my eye. But otherwise, solid effects with plenty of practical stuff, practical effects to keep it from becoming a cartoon for me for too long. It still has that great grounded look that the last movie gave us for the most part. So yeah, that was really great. Really appreciated that. John Williams is back at it again doing the score. His score is as melodramatic as ever. You know, it wouldn't feel like Star Wars without that musical style. You know, I have to admit that. But I might enjoy it more if it were more modern sounding. Again, I am ready for them to just take this franchise in a totally different direction stylistically. Keep the world, but, you know, ditch... You know, now that I think about it, have they ditched... Did they ditch the wipes? Anybody know? Mention in the comics. Did they do a wipe? Did they do a circular wipe or whatever? I don't know if I saw a single wipe in this movie. I could be wrong. But anyway, those kinds of little things. And I would add to that the score and the style of the score. I'm ready to be done with, you know. Let's use a different type of, a more modern type of score, and that would really tickle my fancy quite a bit. All right. Well, as I always try to do, I'm asking myself, is there anything of worthwhile moral, philosophical, or spiritual significance going on in this movie that might stimulate worthwhile thought or conversation? And the Star Wars movies are often good for that. They usually aren't like a model of good thinking, good philosophical thinking, you know, but they often do have some nuggets and stuff that you can easily kind of look at, turn over, and consider. I appreciate, as I mentioned earlier, Luke's criticism of the hypocrisy of the Jedi religion. I wonder if George Lucas himself recognized the hypocrisy in some of what he had the Jedi's preaching in the prequel movies. But it also, you know, that recognition of the hypocrisy among the Jedi Order, who represent the light side of the Force, or do they? Do they just represent a balance? I don't know. That kind of got a little bit wonky. They were super into balance, you know, not necessarily into light. So is there? Cool, dude, that would be a cool option. If the Jedis represent balance, you know, like we're just going for balance here, you know. Don't love. That's too much light or something, or that leads to hate or darkness or whatever the crap. So you got the dark side, and then with the Sith representing that, you got the balance, which the Jedi represent. Wouldn't that be cool if there was a third element? It's like, no, we're going to represent light. We're going to represent good. We're going to be all about good. That would be interesting. But anyway, as it is now, we're kind of robbed of seeing the Force in terms of pure good and pure evil if the Jedi are representing the light side of the Force, because they are obviously hypocritical and stuff like that. So without an objective pure source of goodness, I have to ask, where is the objective morality coming from that our heroes presumably claim to base their actions on? You know, they are the good guys. They are fighting for a good cause. Well, really, what makes their cause good? What objective reality, other than their selfish desire for freedom and survival, you know, is good? You know, what are they basing? I know that sentence was all wrong. Anyway, uncut reviews. And I keep forging onward. Where is the objective morality coming from that our heroes presumably claim to base their actions on? And the truth is, I think that you won't find objective morality in a philosophical system like the one presented in Star Wars and its concept of the Force. Ironically, the logical conclusion of that philosophy is represented by the jaded and morally detached traitor character, the Coder, in this movie, who told Finn after betraying him, hey, you know, essentially he says, today the Order blows you up, tomorrow you blow them up. And that was pretty much it. You know, it's just like, that's just life, that's just how it is. I'm just doing what I got to do in the meantime. You know, without a source of objective morality to argue from, it's really just a matter of seeing who shouts louder or has the better weapon. Which sounds a lot like the internet, doesn't it? My hope, though, is that audiences will listen to that Coder's observation and at the same time consider Luke's criticism of the Jedi Order and their philosophy and recognize the need for something that is not a balance or this mix of light and darkness. Why in the world would we want the status quo to be a mix of bad and good? Why would we not want the status quo to eliminate evil and have only good? Why would we not want something or someone, rather, who is themselves objective, pure, and perfect good and love? So anyway, those are my thoughts. If I have no idea what your tastes are in movies, probably very different from mine when it comes to Star Wars, but if I were a time traveler, I'd go back in time and say, hey, Peter, just wait and watch this one with your boys. They're probably really going to dig some of the parts that you don't like and vice versa. It's a nice halfway point experience for you to share with your boys. And even though it will be unsatisfying to you in many ways, it will still remind you that this world has some cool ideas floating all over the place that are begging to be explored. Maybe eventually in a kind of story that you can really enjoy. It's rated PG-13 for sequences of sci-fi action and violence. I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, POSTOS, Helix Reviews, and the Retro Rewind podcast. For more information about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
This week at SpiritBlade.com, There's really nothing going on because I went off grid as of Wednesday, December 13th. So any orders that are placed over at spiritblade.com for audio dramas, specifically for either gift codes or physical like CD products, those will not be processed until I am back in my office proper on January 8th. I will actually be in my office working up until, just doing a few last minute odds and ends at the very end. When do we leave? We get on the plane on the 20th. So, and the 19th, I'll be busy doing kind of our personal, our little nuclear, is that what you call it? Our little four person family Christmas here in Arizona. And then we're going to go out to Pennsylvania to spend the holidays with my wife's family. And so anyway, I'll be doing less and less work leading up to that exit, but I wanted to kind of have a cutoff point because I knew that I would less and less reliably be able to check my email and get back in touch with people. And then also with the last minute crunch here, sometimes checking email can result in just unexpected things that just require me to take time out, either a conversation or checking on something that's, you know, like a fantasy book that somebody wants me to consider reviewing. Viewing or something like that, new author somebody wants me to check out or whatever. So all those little kind of unexpected tidbits, you know, that can add things to my agenda. I was like, okay, I have to have a more predictable time allowance here at the end. So anyway, that's why I am off grid, and that's why you won't hear back from me if you email me between now and January 7th. And as well as like YouTube comments, I won't be responding to any of those. So if you are unhappy with my thoughts about Star Wars and want to vent at me, or if you want to wish me a Merry Christmas, unfortunately, I will not be able to, I will not be getting either of those things until after the holidays. So January 8th is when I will get back in my saddle as far as email and comments and stuff, and try to get myself caught up as quickly as I can on anything that you might have wanted to share with me in the meantime. So anyway, there is going to be one more episode of this podcast next week, and then there will be 2 weeks where there is no podcast content. But over at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral this week, you can find a channel update, which is just kind of explaining me going off grid, and that's just the first part of that video. The rest of it is Christmas Carol Gaming, which is me in the early morning hours of my recent Extra Life live stream. I'm sharing just a few highlights, kind of a preview. The highlight series of that recent marathon is actually not, I'm not going to start releasing those episodes until, you know, months from now. But I thought, oh, it's kind of timely. In the early morning hours of the marathon, things got a little bit loopy. By that time, the stream had totally broken down, and so I was doing the rest of my marathon offline, but still recording it. And I've just discovered that without people to talk to me either, you know, online in the chat or in person, I had to find other ways to keep myself awake. And so I just found myself singing, lighting candles and singing Christmas carols. So the highlights of that little bit of the marathon in the late, late hours, you can find over at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. And then also I just uploaded my video about my animation likes and dislikes, which was kind of a topic that I got on, I think maybe from the Plus Two page of Many Topics, or maybe it was a question. I can't remember how I got on it, but anyway, it was a topic that I got on during my Backlog Burn live stream, which I did back in June, and now I've been releasing the edited down highlight videos in a series of that. So in this installment, I'm talking about my personal animation likes and dislikes, and along with that, some of the shows and toys that I enjoyed as a kid. And then lastly, you should be able to find by now my Star Wars The Last Jedi review in its full uncut visual format, again, at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. Content will continue there. Next week, I'm planning on putting up a movie review on Friday, and also doing again like part of this this highlight live stream, you know, series from the Backlog Burn next Thursday. And then the 2 weeks following, when there's no podcast to listen to, there will still be content on the YouTube channel. However, it will just be on Thursdays and Fridays, me posting new episodes of that live stream highlight series from the backlog burn that I did over the summer, where I'm going to get on a bunch of various kind of geeky topics. So if you want to kill some time and kick back while you're playing a video game and put me on your PC screen next nearby or your phone or whatever, and just hear me blab and hanging out and talking about stupid stuff, then you can do that. Actually, there is a point where we get into more than just kind of like, entertainment preferences. We get into some deeper philosophical issues, and I get the chance out of that to recommend some resources that you guys might be interested in checking out if you are kind of having some of those questions enter into your mind that are really deep and probing regarding the Christian faith and its truthfulness, or how we should approach, you know, faith and thinking about faith. And I take the chance to recommend two resources that have really been helpful to me in recent years. So you can watch for those videos again during the Christmas and New Year season at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. And while you're there, if you want to like, share, and subscribe, that is a nice way to help to grow our community in the channel. Let's see. I think that's it, except to say I would be really grateful, guys, if you would leave a review of either our audio dramas or this podcast on iTunes, and Amazon is where you can leave also reviews for the audio dramas. I would be surprised if this podcast was somehow on Amazon. That doesn't make any sense to me. But anyway, iTunes and Amazon for reviewing this podcast, or, well, the audio dramas and iTunes for the podcast. That would be reviews and ratings would be appreciated. And in other podcatchers as well, just to help kind of grow our audience and our community. I always enjoy meeting new people when they introduce themselves to me via email or on the forums, so that you guys that are already on the forums can get to know those folks as well. And part of the way that happens is just new people finding out about the Christian Geek Central website and the channel and the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. So reviews is a way that you can help to draw attention to what's going on in those realms. So I'd appreciate that. All right, moving along here. Every now and then people ask me what's on my mind, so I thought I'd take a minute to answer that question. Now pay attention, please, because I don't think I can do this more than once. All right, this part is my parietal lobe, and if I dig back in here, I can pull out some of my occipital. And I don't know what this part is, but whenever I touch it, I smell peanut butter. My top five favorite geeky Christmas presents that I've ever been given. These are the geeky Christmas gifts I was most excited to receive, or that gave me the most enjoyment out of any Christmas gift in my life. Now, once I made my own money, you know, getting a job, you know, your first job and stuff like that, that's from that point on, I just kind of bought the things that I was really most excited about. I just bought those things for myself. Before then, however, Christmas was, as it was, I think, for many people, one of only like two chances growing up each year to acquire some of those big ticket items. So that's why every gift on my list, except for one, was given to me before I got my first job. So get ready to travel with me back in time. These are my top five geeky Christmas gifts. Number five. Boom! Mother trucker! Is a TV/VCR combo, which in and of itself is not like geeky in particular. And this one, I could have maybe saved up for myself. I was working at the time, but I was in college and still living at home, and my parents bought me this TV VCR combo, probably mostly to just get me to stop using the main TV in the living room as much as I was. I was really into just like recording on VCR, you know, all of the shows that I loved. And at the time, I was watching Farscape broadcast for the first time on the Sci-Fi Channel back in the day, and that is still, to this day, my favorite television show of all time. Not just my favorite geek show, my favorite television show of all time. I have not run into a TV show yet that has satisfied me and excited me and moved me, all those things at once, as much as Farscape did. And having this TV VCR combo meant that I could record and keep every episode. until eventually, of course, you know, they got released on DVD. But anyway, at the time, that was a very precious gift. I was also watching and really enjoying the Gundam Wing anime series on Cartoon Network and recording all of those at the time. So that was one of the few anime series that I really found myself enjoying. And so it was really cool to be able to collect all of those and have them all recorded on VCR. I mean, since then, I've long since thrown away those tapes, you know, but that was really cool to be able to have that at the time and just kind of collect and amass all that geeky goodness for myself.
Number four.
Was cool, but not like super exciting the first time that I got it, or we got it. It was the original Nintendo Entertainment System, which was a gift from my grandmother to me and my sisters, so it was kind of a shared gift. And at the time, you know, it was kind of like this cool thing that other kids had, and I was excited about it, but I wasn't like super nerding out over it because I didn't understand at that time what kinds of experiences I would eventually be having on NES and consoles in the future. You know, I wasn't introduced to role-playing games yet at that time. But easily, it had a huge impact on me, and over the course of time, I got so much enjoyment out of playing NES games and just really being fully then introduced to the potential of the world of console video gaming. We'd had an Atari before that, but you know, there weren't really role-playing games in the same sense on Atari as, say, like Final Fantasy or Dragon Warrior on the NES. And so I didn't know when we opened up that NES what that was going to do to me, you know, as far as like my hobbies and interests for the rest of my life. And so that's why Nintendo, even though I wasn't like, oh my gosh, freaking out when I first, you know, when we first opened it up, it easily makes its way onto this list as my number four.
Number three
was a few years after I got the Nintendo, moved on to Super Nintendo by this point. I'd played and been blown away by Final Fantasy III, and I heard that a lot of the same creative minds that were behind Final Fantasy III, which was six in Japan, were going to be releasing a new role-playing game, not in the Final Fantasy series, but with a lot of the same kinds of things that I enjoyed about Final Fantasy, in a new game called Chrono Trigger. I was so excited about this. I think I'd been reading about it in Nintendo Power and heard about like multiple. I mean, it wasn't just like two endings or three endings. I don't know. It has like, I don't know, 14 endings. I think it's over 10. I mean, it's got a ton of different endings. And all the different things that you can do using time travel to change the timeline, you know, and you can open up chests in one time period and they'll be empty later on, or if you leave them alone, then later on what was in them back in the Stone Age will kind of mature and evolve and change into something even cooler and better, you know, if you revisit the same chest in the future, whatever, you know. So it was just really, really cool. What was unusual to me is after playing Final Fantasy III, the experience I had with Final Fantasy III, I think, was 30 hours long, maybe 40 hours long, and I think I beat Chrono Trigger I beat the whole game. I played through it once all the way through before Christmas break was even done. So over the course of, like, I want to say a week and a half or a week, I played through the entire game, and it probably was only about 15 to 20 hours long, maybe, the first time that I went through it. So it was a great experience, but strangely disappointing because of how quickly it was over. Even so, when I opened up that wrapping and saw Chrono Trigger inside, I was so excited, and I really, really enjoyed the time that I spent with it.
Number two
is probably the thing on this list that I was most excited to get when I first opened it up, and that had staying power for the longest time, you know, in terms of like my enjoyment of it. Not as much staying power as my number one, but and certainly I don't think it gave me as many hours of enjoyment as my number one. But man, I was so excited. That was the Game Genie for the original NES. I discovered soon after we plugged in that Nintendo that we got, you know, a few Christmases before, that I'm not very good at games, and I don't have the patience for failing and dying over and over and over again, and yet I wanted to see these worlds, I wanted to explore them and see what the game creators had made. What was in that castle in, you know, level 7-1 in Super Mario Brothers, you know? Or what was it like to really see the princess at the end when you save her, you know? Or what was it like just to kind of jump around and be in these worlds? Never mind the challenge. I'm not really interested in, like, the challenge of getting through these worlds and pattern recognition and all that kind of repetitious crap. I wanted to just see and explore and inhabit these worlds without the difficulty getting in my way. And the Game Genie made that possible for so many games. I would not have stuck with video gaming as a hobby, I'm almost positive. At least not to the extent that I have over the course of my life, if not for the Game Genie, because the Game Genie allowed me to go and take risks and buy titles that I would ordinarily not even consider trying out or acquiring a taste for, if I didn't have cheat codes to guarantee that I would be able to see the end of the story, you know? And so anyway, the Game Genie was just, oh, that was such a huge thing. I still wish that companies, even though we don't have really cheat devices anymore for consoles, obviously you can, you know, cheat the crap out of most PC games. I wish that game developers would build cheats into their games, or even, you know, I know this is going to be maybe a controversial view, but if we're playing a single-player game and you want to charge me for a DLC pack that will unlock a bunch of cheats or something like that, I will pay for that. You know, back in the day, I paid for cheat devices like the Game Genie as I got new consoles, so I'm used to paying to win in my single-player experiences. You know, multiplayer is a very different thing. But I lament a bit that there are not as many cheats available for single-player action experiences in video games today. So I still look back very fondly to the days of the Game Genie and the Game Shark and the different consoles they were made for. And especially I look back fondly when on that first Christmas weekend when I opened up that Game Genie and I just went to town on the handful of games that we had on NES that I'd never been able to beat before, that suddenly I was able to conquer and see these worlds and feel like an awesome hero and all that kind of stuff. Wow, the Game Genie was, that was huge. That was huge. So that's why it's number two on my list. Number one! This is the only item on my list that I had never even heard of before opening it up. I think I'd gotten something else that I wanted for Christmas that year that I really actually lost interest in pretty quickly. It did not live up to the excitement of the commercial that the commercial made me feel. I think it was like hit sticks, those drumsticks that you could drum in the air or something. I don't know what I was thinking. Good gravy. But my mom said, oh, you know, this, I think Peter will like this game. Let's try this game out. And so they bought me this board game called Hero Quest. And I had no idea. I had no idea how this was going to change my life in terms of the things I like to do in my spare time. It was kind of like a slow introduction, just kind of like figuring out, okay, what is this animal? What is it? Okay, so one person plays the bad guys, and then you need other players to play the good guys. Well, you know, I think maybe at first my dad maybe was the overlord, the game master, as we would call him now. Maybe the first time, but then I think I quickly wanted to take on that role because I'm not into competition, but I am into stories and storytelling, and I realized that in this game master role, the pressure wasn't on me to win, and I was kind of supposed to lose, and so there it wasn't a competition anymore, and instead I could just focus on making this cool atmospheric experience. It was kind of like this interactive storytelling experience, and of course I really wasn't familiar with the idea of role-playing games. I mean, I'd heard of Dungeons and Dragons, but at that time there was still like some caution, you know, in a conservative Christian home about the idea of the Dungeons and Dragons, you know. But man, this certainly led to me playing paper and pencil RPGs and all kinds of other thematic board games since then. This really paved the way for paper and pencil role-playing games for me as a hobby, which was a big hobby for me throughout college. And now as I have less time to, you know, and certainly not enough time to game master a game, I've in my adult years and my family years come back to board games quite a bit. And so HeroQuest was where it all started. And I still have, I still get playtime out of this. I still have my HeroQuest box set. I still have the two expansions for it that were released in the United States. My friend and I played this game for hours and hours and hours throughout high school. And then we kept a tradition after that for years of like once or twice a year getting together and having big marathon weekends where we would play Hero Quest the whole time. Long since got through all the published quests and I was making my own quests. And oh my gosh, we got so much time and enjoyment and fun and creativity out of Hero Quest. And not only that, but when we finally, you know, squeezed it dry of all of its potential, a game like Descent First Edition came along and then other games that followed that were modeled after Hero Quest, which of course was modeled after Dungeons and Dragons. But anyway, wow, what a gift that I had no idea what kind of impact it was going to have on me as a geek in all the years that followed. The Christmas experience has changed for me a lot, as I think it does for most people, you know, depending on what your stage of life is. It went from being, you know, really about the excitement of the presents, and then after that I could buy what I was really excited about for myself. So it became more about just kind of the family traditions, connecting with family, serving and getting involved and with the church and ministry going on at that time. And then in recent years now, it's become kind of like this microcosm of the eternal rescue provided by Jesus. I grew up in a musical family that has almost always been involved in extra activity during the month of December and including Christmas Eve services. And as an adult, I've kept a similar pattern. So that means that December every year now for me is just crazy busy. It's this tornado of activity building and building until finally, you know, Christmas Eve, after the celebrations and the serving are done, and we have kind of time during the Christmas Eve service and after to reflect on just kind of the magnitude of the God of the universe lowering himself to living and dying in a sense just like the rest of us, and yet in another sense very differently from the rest of us, all so that we could know him personally and be rescued to live in unhindered relationship with God forever, finally at rest from all of the striving in this life that we experience in general all year long, every year. It's not that we'll eventually have rest from all work, but from all the negative aspects of work that we experience now that make it frustrating or exhausting or fruitless or lacking purpose. In Jesus, we have rest from the games of trying to impress people and carve out some kind of significance for ourselves. In Jesus, we have rest from the impossible task of trying to live up to God's perfect standard and justify ourselves before him through our own efforts. And in providing this rest for us, God didn't just decide to, okay, I'm just going to shrug at evil and just kind of ignore it. He kept the standards based on his own infinite perfections, but at the same time, lovingly provided satisfaction of his justice through Jesus so we could be reconciled and have peace with God. And one day, all those who have accepted God's free offer of reconciliation through Jesus will be completely and forever rescued from the striving and the pain that we experience in this life. And it's because of that future reality that we can begin experiencing joy and peace right now, even in the middle of this dark and broken world. So while it's not like a geeky Christmas gift, these days for me, that the foreshadow of that eternal peace is really the best gift for this particular geek. And I hope that you experience some of that too in the next couple of weeks. Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and as useful as we can, but I have to hear from you to do that. You can send an email or audio file recorded on your phone to paeter@spiritblade.com. And again, just a reminder, I will not be checking my email until January 8th, so I apologize if you send an email to me and you are surprised at, you know, not hearing back. That would be why. That's it. Stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or you can jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God allows it, I'll be back for one final podcast of 2017, which will, I think, feature my review of The Shape of Water. And then I'm also going to share some thoughts on the significance of Christmas and the ministry of Christ, specifically sharing some thoughts on that through the lens of storytelling and looking at the ministry ministry of Christ, the significance of Christmas, through the metaphor of a story being told by God throughout history. So I hope that's something that you'll find meaningful and enjoyable. Till then, please consider the work of Christian Geek Central and Spirit Blade. Please consider supporting the work of Christian Geek Central and Spirit Blade Productions by purchasing an audio drama, leaving a donation, or becoming a Spirit Blade insider. You can get more information from our about page at spiritblade.com. Thank you again, guys, so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
And that was Hard Time. We again have TJ Swanson, the outsider who doesn't know much of Star Trek, here with us.
I'm getting to know quite a bit. Yeah.
This episode, it begins with O'Brien about, what, I'm guessing his 50s or 60s in prison. Mm-hmm. And he's all alone, and then he gets released from prison, and then he gets pulled out, and here's the big surprise twist, is he's basically served 20 years in prison in his mind. And so that's what this society does, is even though he didn't deserve to go to prison, but because of the way they do it, it only took a few hours.
Yeah, by the time his crewmates found out what they were doing to him, it had already been done.
Yeah. And so we were talking, and this could fit onto Farscape or Doctor Who or the Twilight Zone, any kind of show with a sci-fi premise where you can do things in the mind like that. And so, while this is good in Star Trek, and it's an excellent episode, this could be any series, and it's...
You could probably do it fantasy, too, if you have any sort of, like, portal or telepathy
or time travel,
like,
even.
Premise.
You can just move their mind backward. But, yeah, that's the gist, is basically, we're seeing O'Brien suffer having been in prison for 20 years. Only, we have our cake and eat it, too, because we also get to come back, and he hasn't lost 20 years of his life. So he has all the scars, but none of the actual change in his life.
Well, and that's part of the difficulty for him is coming back. He feels the 20 years have passed, but for everyone else it's only been a few days.
Yeah, and it's actually surprising how aware everyone is of justice. You would think a lot of people would have a hard time, like, sympathizing with this because they did not experience that 20 years. But it seems like everyone else around him, they're not just sympathetic to he's been through a lot. They seem to actually understand he's been 20 years in his perspective.
Yeah, Keiko's actually being a very, very good supportive spouse in this one.
Except for one moment. We'll get to that in a second.
There's one thing I didn't quite like about it. I mean, they had one moment where he's coming up on Deep Space Nine and says, I forgot how beautiful it was.
Uh-huh.
But he has very few moments of, I remember this, and I forgot this. Yeah, there's almost...
Yeah, that would have been nice to see more of that. That's true.
Which I would have, if I had spent 20 years away from the place...
Yeah.
And came back, I'd be doing that.
Yeah, you don't see him, like, kind of walking around his quarters like,
You see a hint of that.
Now, there is a bit when he first sees his wife again.
Yeah.
Where he just kind of looks at her, and it's like, the actor is doing it well. You can see on his face.
It's well,
like,
acted.
Oh my God, that's right, Keiko, you know.
There's only one part that we were talking about we didn't like is... sorry, we have to... Well, I'm not going to spoil everything, but... because most of this episode is pretty much that. It's him sorting out what he did, what happened to him, all those kind of things in prison, and the problems of that. But there's one part where, basically, he is at home trying to cope with things, and his daughter, his little, like, what, 3-4-year-old daughter, something like that?
Molly? I drew a picture. Hey, look! Daddy! Look! Look! You have to look! Look! I drew a picture! Look! Look! Look
and
at the picture!
Be quiet!
He just gets up and yells, I said in a minute.
Yeah, he just stands and kind of looms over and is yelling at her.
And it's excessive, yes, it's harsh, but everyone freaks out as if he had picked her up and whacked her against the wall three or four times.
Keiko actually says, "What the hell are you doing?"
Yeah, she snatches the child up and like.
And she's like whimpering in her arms.
Like,
Daddy expressing emotion.
And you know, we were all joking about how in the enlightened Roddenberry future, you know, they probably view spanking as a form of, you know, internationally banned torture.
Yes.
So I'm sure just raising your voice to your child is horrible.
And like I say, it's not that it's good to scream at your kid, but that happens.
But the moment where he snaps and realizes he's become a monster, it's pretty pathetic.
Yeah. For his lowest point.
All right, let's put it this way. Earlier, he almost broke Quark's arm for not immediately serving him a drink.
Yeah, and I think that was a better one.
And that he could justify, like, well, you know, it's Quark. What the hell?
Nobody likes
Quark.
And that's what they did later. He said, well, I heard he had a problem with Quark. Oh, it's Quark. Yeah, I know. But then you yelled at your daughter when she was being really annoying.
Well, we were even saying, you know, that was the sort of thing that most parents... I could even see a parent who is not horribly traumatized snapping at their kid over that, because she was being aggravating.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure just about everyone here who has kids has done that. And again, it's not that it's a good thing or that's normal, but, well, it is normal. It's not...
It's human.
Yeah, it's... You know, but for the most part, that was the weakest point in this episode, mostly because they overplayed how bad it was.
Well, yeah, if he actually did something bad enough for him to say, oh my god, I've changed it on the
line. Yeah, then the audience would lose him.
If he touched her...
Yeah.
Like I said, a spanking would be some sort of war crime. If he did that, then a lot of people watching would have been, they've gone too far, even if he is messed up in the head, he can't come back from that. And they need the status quo.
Yeah, and it's a sad thing. Well, it's not about status quo, although I will say, this is one of the great examples of one of those, this will be with you for a long time, you'll never get past it, but we'll never reference it again. So
by next episode, O'Brien will be back to his usual self.
Yeah.
So, there is a failure on that. However, I do think they do, like you said, they do a good job of showing him having to cope with this.
Yeah.
Having to cope with this trauma. You know, showing the other characters actually being very reasonable and very sensitive to his needs. Sisko continues to be badass.
Yeah.
Because Sisko is both being a caring friend and commander, but also saying...
He will not give when he needs to do what he's supposed to do.
He will not tolerate. You will go to your counseling appointments, and you will do whatever Bashir says, or I will confine you to the infirmary. Is that understood?
I'm trying to think. Well, this does do a good job putting to lie the whole Roddenberryan notion that... And he gives a whole speech about, you know, I was always told we're evolved past this, you know, but as soon as hardships came... I reacted like an animal. And it's like, well, yeah, that's the whole point, because that's not something you evolve past. It's a behavior that you choose to act according to. And so, yeah, the idea that you evolve past your natural instincts and passions and the horror of what you might go through is ridiculous, and it's insulting to the concept of morality.
I've got something. Where was he imprisoned?
I guess in his mind.
Well, here's the thing.
It's not a race we've ever seen or will see again.
Why all the sand? And I mean, that was an even coating of sand consistent across 20 years. Did they replace sand? Is there like, along with food shipments, they send in some sand to cover the floor?
Not that they'd be willing to go here, but think about this. Why do people give their cats a box full of sand?
Yeah, because
we never see John.
We don't see buckets.
Maybe they just held it for 20 years.
Well, that would explain why he's so angry by the end. I would be too.
And it would explain why he didn't lose any weight.
But yeah, this is a good episode. It's a standalone episode by itself. Colin Meaney, who plays Chief O'Brien, is just top of his game as an actor. And like I said, this could easily be an episode of Farscape or Doctor Who or something like that. So you don't need to know Star Trek at all. That's what all we have to say about that. Definitely check out. Next time, it's back to the Mirror Universe. And the last of the Mirror Universe episodes, I think, that you could probably take seriously. After that...
Before it gets really stupid.
Yes, then it starts getting to cartoon time. This is the last one where there's actual drama to be had in the Mirror Universe. And we'll see you then.